And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And with me is Phil Conlon.
Yes, good afternoon, Phil.
And today we're going to talk about the crisis developing around Korea with Stephen Gowans. And we're going to, in the latter part of the show, we're going to try to update everyone about our Prime Minister Trudeau's foreign minister. That would be Canada's foreign minister, who for 1 week has been very quiet about her history because it's, as the Toronto Star says, nothing to see here. So we're going to see if there's anything to see here. That'll be in the latter part of the show. But I think we are now joined by Stephen Gowans himself. Are you there, Stephen?
Hello, Phil.
Hi. Hey, it's good to talk to you, Stephen. I want to make sure I say that you have a book coming out. It's called Washington's Long War on Syria. It'll be out, I believe, in April. That's Baraka Books that people should get their orders in now. And then, of course, this is Stephen Gowans. It's gowans.wordpress.com. And the title, you've written two articles in a row, so I assume this is very important. The first one is titled, Washington Considers Military Action Against North Korea to Force Regime Change. And then 1 week later, as of today, you have a piece titled, Pentagon leads over 300,000 troops in a rehearsal for an invasion 1 week after the White House announces it's considering military action against North Korea. Situate this. My understanding is that they always say when you point out that 300,000 or many troops are involved in some type of hyped-up military exercise, that they always say it's routine. Where in the world is this routine to gather this many troops and to go through this kind of exercise? And of course, you can elaborate what this actually is.
Yeah, I mean, it's called routine, and it's also called purely defensive. These military exercises this year are the largest ever. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, they involve 300,000 South Korean troops, 17,000 U.S. troops. The super carrier, USS Carl Vinson, and then, you know, various stealth bombers and B-18 and B-52 bombers and all kinds of military equipment. But they call it purely defensive, as the United States and South Korea do, is misleading. The exercises are not defensive in the sense of, you know, practicing to repel a possible North Korean invasion, or if North Korean forces invaded, to push them back across the 38th parallel. Mm-hmm. But this envisages an invasion of North Korea in order to incapacitate its nuclear weapons, in order to destroy its military command, and in order to assassinate its leader.
By the way, that's explicit somewhere.
Pardon me?
That's explicit, right? They talk, this is kind of laid out.
Yes, it's laid out in something they call their Operation Plan 5015, which aims to remove North Korea's weapons of mass destruction and prepare for a preemptive strike in the event of an imminent North Korean attack, as well as what they call decapitation raids targeting the leadership. Now, it's been pointed out that in this year's exercises involve special missions units responsible for killing Osama bin Laden in 2011, including SEAL Team 6.
Yes, the famous SEAL team.
And according to one newspaper, the participation of special forces in the drills may be an indication the two sides are rehearsing the assassination of Kim Jong-un.
By the way, Hollywood did that for them, right? And everybody just thought that was funny.
Yes. But, I mean, the likelihood that North Korea would attack South Korea is so vanishingly small that the idea that the exercises are defensive is just untenable. Mm-hmm. I mean, North Korea is outspent militarily by Seoul by a factor of almost 4-1. The South Korean forces have more advanced weapon systems than North Korea does. And South Korean military is not only backed up by and integrated with, but it's under the command of the most powerful military in the world, that of the United States. So a North Korean attack on South Korea would be suicidal. And therefore, I mean, I think we can regard its possibility as virtually non-existent. And the United States has made it clear to North Korea's leadership on numerous occasions that if it ever did undertake an attack on South Korea, that it would be turned into, quote, a charcoal briquette, as Colin Powell once said.
Oh, my goodness.
So, I mean, this is completely preposterous. I don't believe that anyone of any consequence in the U.S. government actually believes that North Korea poses the slightest threat to South Korea. So the idea that these exercises are defensive, I think, is completely untenable.
Mm-hmm.
They are. The North Korea complains that they are a rehearsal for an invasion, and I think that's an apt description.
Well, as a matter of fact, yeah, as you lay it out, almost everything involved in this is of an offensive nature. And diplomacy doesn't exist, right? You have a wonderful quote in the article from Colin Powell where he says, we don't do treaties.
No, it doesn't exist.
What was his job? I forget. The Secretary of State, but he doesn't do treaties. Actually, I think that's the job description.
That's right. And for years and years, for many years anyway, Pyongyang has been saying to Washington, if you suspend these exercises, we'll suspend our nuclear weapons and ballistic missile program. And on each occasion, the United States immediately dismisses the proposal. But this goes back to 2003. It was consistent with the U.S. approach back to 2003 when the North Koreans almost begged the United States to negotiate a peace treaty. And Colin Powell said, well, we don't do non-aggression pacts or treaties, things of that nature.
Yeah. I guess there are a few parties around the world who would be looking at some of those agreements saying, I thought we had a deal. I have to inevitably ask something I don't think is in your article, but the president of South Korea has just been impeached, mm-hmm. and she was a mighty hawk, is my understanding, and she's descended from hawks. As a matter of fact, was it her father or grandfather served with the Japanese? And we're told that there are, in the opposition, a couple of the leading voices are not hawks, and indeed they don't like to see this thing called the THAAD, THAADD, introduced into South Korea. Is the United States trying to preempt democracy in South Korea?
Trying or have already?
Have they? Yeah, I guess I shouldn't put it like that. But they do appear to be kind of getting in the way of it, don't they? Nobody's asking them. They don't even have a president at the moment.
No, I mean, the United States has considerable influence in Korea. There's a New Zealand former academic named Tim Beal, who specializes in East Asia, and he says that the United States has an undeclared empire, and kind of the proof of that is that there's something called NATO, and there's something called the UN Command in South Korea, and in both cases, they're under the control of U.S. generals.
Mm-hmm. Now, that, by the way, is, of course, the Taylor Report's fun fact. You say that in de jure, the U.S. has final authority, and de facto, it's total authority over the Korean military.
Yeah, I mean, it has de jure authority in times of emergency, but that de facto authority over the South Korean military at all times. It essentially commands the South Korean military. Mm-hmm. And in times of emergency, then the South Koreans acknowledge that they're under the control of the U.S., mm-hmm. U.S. general.
And the U.S. has introduced nuclear weapons into that area more than once, right? And put it on the table, as you say.
Yes, they've had tactical nuclear weapons in South Korea up till 1991 when they were withdrawn. And the reintroduction of those weapons is under consideration right now at the White House, along with something else, which I should mention, which was just a week ago, the White House let it be known that they were considering direct military action on the Korean Peninsula to bring about regime change in North Korea. If we think about, you know, you can contrast that with these assurances that the United States provides that, well, these are just routine defensive exercises. I don't know why the North Koreans are so upset about this. Mm-hmm. And by the way, also, the Americans and the South Koreans have said they'll be on the alert for any kind of provocative actions that the North Koreans take, as if what they're doing is not provocative. But, I mean, you can do this thought experiment where you think about Moscow mobilizing 300,000 Russian troops along the Ukraine border under an operational plan to invade Ukraine, to neutralize its military assets, to destroy its military command, and to assassinate its president 1 week after the Kremlin declares it's considering military action in Ukraine to bring about regime change. And, I mean, who is going to not construe that as purely defensive in nature?
Mm-hmm.
Tim Beal, who I mentioned, once said that one of the powers that the United States has is to construct a special kind of unreality. And this is a special kind of unreality where we can think that these massive war games are purely defensive in nature.
Yeah, and there's no questions, I mean, asked. Certainly that is the acceptance of the unreality. By the way, I alluded to Hollywood, but certainly the entire spectrum of popular media basically diverts attention from these crises. And when they do refer to Korea, it's only to reinforce the idea that they're dealing there with someone who's insane, which, by the way, would mean sort of like any emergency situation, anything is possible since your opponent is beyond rationality. So they have a blank sheet. China has made a proposal. I read it in your article. The idea of simply an agreement not to continue with missile exercises, development of nuclear, whatever, in exchange for is it the reduction of forces on the part of the U.S. or?
It's the same proposal that Pyongyang has made in previous years. The proposal is.
Is it both sides suspending? I guess it was suspend such exercises. This is the one that's about to take place, right?
Yes. The U.S. suspends its exercises. North Korea suspends its development of nuclear weapons. And that was immediately dismissed. Wasn't even under consideration. The Japanese ambassador to the U.N. said, well, this fails to recognize that the goal here is denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. The goal isn't to stop the United States and South Korea from threatening the North on a continual basis. That's the U.S. bargaining approach. It's not even a bargaining approach. The approach is, you give us what we ask for, and then we'll think about talking to you.
Mm-hmm. By the way, now, there's a history. Bill Clinton went through a whole song and dance with North Korea where they did do the things he asked, but he didn't do the things he promised. Am I right?
You're correct. He went through the motions of doing what he promised, but he never actually completed what it was that he promised. And it turned out later, it was revealed later, that the reason why is because he fully expected the North Korean government to collapse.
I remember that. We were all waiting. Everybody took a basket to catch the pieces, and then it didn't happen.
Yes, and, you know, as another North Korean specialist has pointed out, they've been talking about the North Korean government collapsing for almost seven decades, the seven decades of government's existence, and maybe it's time they discovered that it's probably not going to collapse.
Mm-hmm. But they are extraordinary, a population of 25 million, and the South Korean population is 50 million, my understanding. And they were, according to the U.S. military, at the end of the Korean War, there wasn't one brick standing on top of another in North Korea, and yet there they are.
Uh-huh.
Can you explain that?
There they are, and it's been almost seven full decades.
Let me offer an idea. Socialism, everything to do with this?
Well, it's incredible. I mean, for almost seven full decades, they've been under, essentially, they've been under attack. There's been the threat of war, the threat of invasion from the United States. There has been economic warfare. Almost from 1948, the year in which North Korea was established as a state. And this, I think, though, has even taken a considerable toll. And as you point out, they also had to rebuild from this the war from 1950 to 1953 when the country was completely devastated. Today, North Korea allocates an estimated 15 to 24% of its GDP to defense,
mm-hmm.
and not surprising that it has to do that, given that it's incessantly under threat.
And by the way, you argue or point out that this is one of the reasons they developed nuclear. It is somewhat less expensive.
Yeah, and that's part of the proposal. Their policy that they're following is, okay, if we have a nuclear deterrent, we can reduce the amount that we spend on conventional forces and then allocate that to the civilian economy, which makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. By the way, in your article, I want to remind everybody, it's a column. It's called What's Left. It's gowans.wordpress.com, and both March 7 and March 13, Stephen has articles, and in there you do link various, in your footnotes, and I checked one of them, and it was somewhat maddening because it said about the North Korean missile test that they fired a missile, and it said aimed at Japan. It wasn't aimed at Japan, obviously. It landed in the ocean where they knew it was going to land, but it was flying in the direction of Japan, but that's a little somewhat different. If I fire an M1 toward the west, I'm firing at Japan, I guess.
No, exactly. And they're not too deep directions in which the North Koreans can test their missiles.
Yeah. There's only two choices, right?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they only have two directions they can fire into the ocean.
Yes. I haven't didn't mention THAAD in the articles, but you alluded to THAAD, which is the Terminal High Altitude Area Defense, and there's a lot of controversy about that at the moment, which is an anti-ballistic missile system that the United States is in the process of installing in South Korea on the Korean Peninsula. And this has led to considerable alarm in China, and the Chinese are exceedingly irritated that the South Koreans have agreed to the U.S. proposal to install this anti-ballistic missile system in the Korean Peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you can speculate as to why it is that Washington has done this. I mean, one of the reasons is I believe it puts considerable pressure on the Chinese. The Chinese, the Russians, the North Koreans, and many others believe that THAAD, which is the United States portrays as a way of defending South Korea from North Korean missiles, is seen not as being directed at North Korea, but as being directed at China and also toward Russia. And the way in which it's directed at Russia and China is that it has radar facilities which allows the United States, or will allow the United States, to peer into China, deep into China, mm-hmm. and send information back to the larger system of anti-ballistic missile defense that the United States operates. And, you know, while anti-ballistic missile defense is presented as a defensive measure, it is in fact a offensive measure, because it's a means by which one can acquire the ability to strike first with nuclear weapons and protect oneself against retaliation. So it undermines the entire concept of mutually assured destruction. Mm-hmm. This is troubling to the Chinese because the Chinese have a fairly modest nuclear arsenal. Their nuclear arsenal is, or their nuclear strategy is simply based on deterrence. Unlike the United States, they don't have a first strike policy. Unlike the United States, they say they will never use nuclear weapons against countries that don't have nuclear weapons. But they have, as I said, a fairly limited nuclear arsenal with the intention of simply having a way of deterring another country, the United States in particular, from attacking. Mm-hmm. If the United States is able to perfect or at least to strengthen its anti-ballistic missile system, it kind of undermines the deterrent basis of the Chinese nuclear weapons arsenal.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Stephen Gowans, gowans.wordpress.com, and the new book, by the way, is Washington's Long War on Syria, Stephen Gowans, Baraka Books. It'll be out in April. We should also remind people, should we not, that the United States, and it was General MacArthur himself, the greatest general, blah, blah, who attacked China, crossed their borders, and ended up with a whale of a war and 50,000 Allied casualties, like American. I think there were maybe as high as 25,000 Canadians because of this brilliant maneuver. They also talk to China often in the same tone of voice that they take towards North Korea.
Yes, and you know, it's also been argued that a lot of what the United States does in connection with North Korea is really aimed at China. And I cite in one of my articles an interesting report or task force report that was done by the high-profile Council on Foreign Relations, which is the foreign policy think tank that often provides advice and recommendations to the U.S. government, and whose members often serve in very important positions within the U.S. State Department. And their last task force report advised the U.S. government against striking any kind of peace deal with the North Koreans, because they said if you do that, the North Koreans will expect withdrawal of U.S. forces from the Korean Peninsula, and that's the last thing we want to happen.
Amazing. By the way, they've been there since 1945, and they call South Korea democracy, but they won't go home.
No, and they don't want to go home.
They want to go somewhere else. They're not through empiring. This is Stephen Gowans. Here's a question that it seems relevant. We have a new president, and he said he didn't want to be involved in foreign wars and regime change. And now here we are massing 300,000 excited troops and aircraft carriers and everything else. And so is Trump doing what Putin is telling him to do? Is this Putin's idea? If I'm to understand Hillary and the New York Times?
I mean, U.S. foreign policy carries on in the usual manner. You could even argue that with respect to North Korea, it's become even more hostile and alarming than it was previously. I mean, there's all the talk about the White House considering its options in North Korea, from direct military intervention to reintroduction of tactical weapons, to continuing its cyber war. That's another interesting thing. It's now been revealed that that the United States has been engaged in a cyber war against the North Korea. And some are wondering whether some difficulties the North Koreans have been having with their missile program is attributable to U.S. efforts in that regard. We also know that the United States is engaged in a sabotage program against their missiles. So, certainly no reduction in the level of hostility toward the United States. And if they're explicitly talking about the possibility of taking military action to bring about regime change, then it's kind of difficult to say in any convincing way that that the Trump administration isn't interested in bringing about regime change around the world or in the traditional countries in which the United States has been hostile.
Yeah. By the way, they seem addicted to elite operations and black – they like to use words like black ops. And it always turns out that the – when you get up close, these guys turn out to look a lot like Jesse Ventura. And then when you see what they did when they killed bin Laden, they hung up a helicopter there, and it was a near botched operation. In many ways, a joke. So they say, well, we have – don't worry, we got SEAL Team 6, and they're going to go and decapitate. And you say – oh, I mean, what are the odds they're going to get there at all? This is this infatuation with the words elite and crack and special. This is a highly deluded group of people, don't you think?
Yeah. And, well, and the emphasis on special forces is so, well, I mean, part of it's deceptive, so that you can actually intervene militarily in a country and then say that you don't have boots in the ground, as has been done in Syria.
Yes. And in the case of Yemen, we just recently, they shot up a household, and including, I think, the granddaughter of an American citizen who had earlier been killed and then lost somebody. And so what did Washington say? It's a big success. We're the ones who seem to have kind of cracked leaders. I mean, and I mean Obama, Clinton, across the board. Just for clarification, if you tell me what is THAAD again, THADD, that the South Koreans seem to really not want that?
The terminal high altitude area.
Oh, yes. Once you got beyond the – I'm sorry. You did explain.
There's some controversy about whether it actually could be used to provide any kind of defense against South Korean or North Korean missiles. The argument is that because North Korea and South Korea are side by side, that if North Korea fired missiles at South Korea, they would have a low altitude, which would be well below the high altitude at which the THAAD battery operates. I don't know, I can't, not being an expert in these matters, I can't really evaluate.
Not an expert, I wouldn't want to be living in either North or South if something like that happened. This has been Stephen Gowans, two excellent articles, March 7, March 13, at gowans.wordpress.com. And he is the author of Washington's Long War on Syria, published by Baraka Books, coming out soon. And Stephen, thank you very much. You make me hope that there actually will be a democratic election in South Korea and the Americans be asked, please go home.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Taylor Report, CIET 89.5 FM. We want to review the position of our foreign minister. She's not available apparently these days, but we'll talk about her in her absence. And we're going to hear some Lee Morgan.